Welcome to Parasitology Revisited, a series of revision podcasts for BVMNS graduate entry and infection and immunity students. Parasite Life Cycles by Dr. Tudor Jones. Throughout the course, I've emphasized the importance of understanding parasite life cycles in relation to epidemiology, disease, and control. So this podcast summarizes the basic features of the different types of parasite life cycles that you need to carry forward to enhance your understanding of the course, as well as giving you ideas of how you might answer an exam question on parasite life cycles. Before we start to think about the different types of life cycles, we need to remind ourselves about another property of parasites, in as much as they are described as either permanent or temporary parasites. Permanent parasites pass directly from one host to another, while temporary parasites leave the host at some point in their life cycle. Temporary parasites cycle between a parasitic form, which is the feeding and reproductive stage, and a non-parasitic form, such as the cyst or egg stage, which is adapted for life outside the host and acts as the infective form of the parasite. Now we can move on to thinking about the different types of parasite life cycles that we have dealt with in the parasitology course. I'm sure that by now you'll remember the two types of life cycles, direct and indirect life cycles, and you need to recognize that there are important differences between them, especially in the way that they influence epidemiology, disease, and control options. Also, you need to be aware that the technical term for the parasites with direct life cycles is monozenous, while those with indirect life cycles are termed heterozenous, but a bit more on this later on. Of the two forms of life cycle, the direct life cycle is the simplest one to understand, as we only have the one host involved in the life cycle, with all the parasitic processes, infection, feeding, and reproduction taking place in that one host. Hence the use of the term monozenous. Examples of permanent parasites with direct life cycles are the protozoan Trichomonas fetus and Trypanosoma equipoidum, which are passed from one host to another during copulation, and the nematode Trichinella, where the larvae pass directly from the female worm into the host muscles, where they stay until the muscle is eaten by the next host. It is important to remember that permanent parasites do not have any external forms such as cysts or egg stages in their life cycle. Most of the parasites with direct life cycles, however, are described as temporary parasites, with the organism alternating between a parasitic form and a non-parasitic form, which can be eggs, larvae, cysts or oocysts. There are plenty of protozoan and helminth examples that you can use to illustrate an exam question on parasites with direct life cycles, so I'm not going to list them here. As you might expect, the parasitic forms are associated with disease, while the external forms are the infective stage of the parasite, and their availability in the environment drives transmission rates and overall parasite epidemiology. External forms usually show similar adaptations to life outside the host, such as a thick protective outer layer seen in cysts, oocysts, and some helminth eggs, or they can be active feeding forms as we see in the larval stages of nematodes. In the case of temporary parasites, both parasitic and non-parasitic forms can be targeted in control regimes, while opportunities for controlling permanent parasites are more limited. Parasites with indirect life cycles have a more complex life history than those with a direct life cycle, as there are at least two hosts involved in the life cycle, hence the use of the term heterozenous. The hosts involved in indirect life cycles are also often taxonomically unrelated, such as herbivores and carnivores, or vertebrates and invertebrates. Coming to terms with the epidemiology of these parasites requires you to have an understanding of how the parasite interacts with each host in the cycle, as well as the interactions between the different hosts. to cope with the increased complexity of indirect life cycles, we have to introduce some additional terminology so that we can differentiate between the different hosts in relation to their role in the life cycle. The host in which sexual reproduction takes place is called the definitive host, while all the other hosts in the life cycle are called intermediate hosts. Any reproduction that takes place in the intermediate host is asexual. We also come across other types of hosts in some life cycles, such as transport hosts and paratenic hosts, but I'll talk about those in another podcast. In the case of arthropod-born protozoa, it is often difficult to differentiate between definitive and intermediate host based on our definition of these two types of host, as it's unclear about where sexual reproduction takes place. Consequently, we can't describe them as having a true indirect life cycle, even though we know that the parasite has to cycle between two different types of hosts. Because of this, we have made a pragmatic decision for this course to describe the life cycle of parasites such as Babesia as having a vector-borne life cycle. However, other arthropod-born parasites, such as filarial worms, where there are clearly defined definitive and intermediate hosts, can be described as having an indirect life cycle. I appreciate that this is a bit confusing, but you also know by now that parasites are always breaking the rules that we set. The vast majority of parasites with indirect life cycles must cycle sequentially between the definitive and intermediate hosts to complete their life cycle. These are described parasitologically as obligate heterozenous parasites. However, a few parasites are described as facultatively heterozenous in that they can complete their life cycle without needing to infect both types of hosts. These are rare, but you need to understand which parasites with indirect life cycles are obligate and which ones are facultative, as this has important consequences for understanding the epidemiology and control options for the individual parasites. An example of a facultative heterozenous parasite is the protozoan Toxoplasma, where the cat is the definitive host, with the mouse acting as the intermediate host. However, cats can become infected directly from other cats by ingesting oocysts, which would normally be the source of infection for the intermediate host. This means that the parasite can maintain itself in the cat population, even in the absence of mice. The simplest form of an indirect life cycle involves one definitive host and one intermediate host, as we see in the filarial nematode worms. In this case, the intermediate host is an insect, and the parasite is passed between the definitive host and intermediate host when the insect feeds on either the blood of the definitive host, as in dirofilaria, or on inflammatory secretions, as in parafilaria. You will also have probably worked out by now that these are examples of permanent parasites. The next level of complexity of parasites with indirect life cycles is where we have one definitive host and one intermediate host as before, but now we introduce a non-parasitic form such as an oocyst, egg, or other external form of the parasite into the life cycle. The external form can act as an infective form for either the intermediate host, definitive host, or for both host types. Examples of this type of life cycle include the protozoan Sarcocystis, where oocysts are passed in the feces of the definitive host, which are then ingested by the intermediate host. The oocysts give rise to parasitic forms which insist in the muscle of the intermediate host as bradyzoite cysts. Infection of the definitive host happens when the definitive host eats the muscle containing the insisted forms. So in this case, the parasite epidemiology is driven by a predator-prey relationship. The protozoan Toxoplasma has a similar type of life cycle to Sarcocystis, but as I explained before, this life cycle is complicated by the fact that the parasite can maintain itself in the definitive host, even in the absence of the intermediate host, as well as being able to infect a wide range of host species. In the Trematode Fasciola, parasite eggs are passed out in the feces of the definitive host, which give rise to the free-swimming Myrisidium form, which infects the snail intermediate host. After a period of development in the snail, the cercarial form emerges from the snail onto the pasture, where it swims to vegetation and then changes into the metasercaria form, which is infective for the definitive host. In this case, the relationship between the two host types would be described as a vertebrate-invertebrate relationship, with the epidemiology driven by co-location and co-feeding of the two types of host, with the infective forms for both the definitive and intermediate host being external, non-parasitic forms. Other examples from the course would include the predator-prey relationships of the cestodes and the metastrongyle nematodes of pigs. At the highest level of complexity, we have parasite life cycles with one definitive host, two or more intermediate hosts, and one or more external forms. An example of this level of complexity is seen in the life cycle of the trematode Dicrocoelium, where the sheep is the definitive host, with a snail and ant as intermediate hosts. Parasite eggs are passed out in the feces of the definitive host, which is the source of the infection for the snail. The snail eventually produces a form of the parasite that is infective for the ant, which in turn harbours the infective form for the sheep, which acquires the infection when it accidentally ingests the ant during grazing. As in Fasciola, this is a vertebrate-invertebrate relationship driven by co-location and co-feeding. And to complete its life cycle, the parasite must infect each host in the right sequence. Although parasites with indirect life cycles present you with a greater challenge when trying to understand their epidemiology, they do provide you with more opportunities for control when compared with those with direct life cycles. Control regimes for parasites with direct life cycles often depend on the use of antiparasitics to prevent or remove parasite infections, and in some cases, such as the nematodes of ruminants and horses, animal husbandry practices such as rotational grazing can be used to reduce the degree of exposure to infective forms in the environment. While these methods can also be used for parasites with indirect life cycles, the presence of additional hosts in the life cycle provides further opportunities for control based on breaking the cycle of infection by reducing transmission opportunities between the different host types. Examples would include draining pastures to reduce or eliminate the snail intermediate host population, as in the case of Fasciola, introducing legislation controlling disposal of offal for the control of hydatid disease, or insect reduction techniques for the control of arthropod-transmitted parasites such as filarial worms. This podcast is based on the content of a number of my lectures, so if you want to follow up any of these points, or you want to include your own examples and possibly get more marks in the exam, then you should go back to the lecture notes, as well as looking at my lecture presentations on the parasitology website at www.vet.ed.ac.uk/parasitology.